You are Locked On Grizzlies, your daily Memphis Grizzlies podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to this Thursday edition of the Locked On Grizzlies podcast. And again, I'm lucky to have another special guest with us this time. I'm sure listeners are familiar with this gentleman. His name is Joel Mullinex, a site manager for Grizzly Bear Blues and regular weekly guest on Locked On Grizzlies. How are you tonight, Joe?
I'm doing well, buddy. I got to tell you, your accent is already making you 10 times better than Mark. I've been listening all week, and, you know, I love Mark, but you just have a certain twang in your voice that makes me feel like I'm talking Memphis basketball. So, you know, I know Mark will be back soon, but hopefully he's enjoying his break, and it's good talking to you.
Same here. The pleasure is all mine. I've gotten expanded a little bit on the podcast, and I've gotten some feedback, and people, I don't hear it, but it must be there. So I guess I'll take your word for it. But, you know, Joe, like I say, it's great to get to talk with you again. And, you know, I use the word great because, you know, last night, it just was a different feeling than we've had over the past, you know, few months. It was an amazing night. Like I was jumping up and down. I was excited. It felt like, you know, a playoff atmosphere. And I just want to directly ask you to start off. Are you having fun again, Joe, covering the Grizzlies?
It's definitely more enjoyable after wins, and that kind of sports in general, as most folks understand. Winning is better than losing. But at the same time, for me, Sean, it's the fact that they're competitive. You know, even in games that they've lost, they've only been blown out once since the trade deadline passed against the Bulls. I think that was the game before the All-Star break. Every other game, even in losses, they've been competitive at some point, at some stage. They just seem to be more relaxed. You know, I don't know if it's because of Marc Gasol's departure or the fact that, you know, their goal is now to try to convey a first-round draft pick. I wrote about that for the blog today. The idea of, you know, they have a stated goal, and it's a realistic goal. It's something that they can't achieve. And they all individually, beyond the team goal of conveying the pick to Boston this year, individually, a lot of them have a motivation to compete at a high level that's monetary in nature. You know, whether it's, you know, guys with player options, Avery Bradley, of course, folks have talked about that contract and the $2 million that are guaranteed to him out of $13 million that would be valuable to the Grizzlies to pass on if they don't want to pay Avery $13 million. But he's trying to earn that money, of course. And DeLon Wright, as a restricted free agent, trying to show why he was the quote-unquote centerpiece of the Marc Gasol trade. You've got a lot of moving pieces here. And in the absence of time to actually construct a team with culture and identity and all that stuff, the fact that opportunity is there for all of these guys if they want it is kind of filling that void nicely at the moment. So I'm not thinking that J.B. Bickerstaff has become some brilliant coach. I do think that you've got a bunch of hungry guys that are re-engaged with the franchise and are excited to have the opportunity to play. They may not have the connection to Memphis that previous players did, but what they do have is a desire to remain NBA basketball players or to remain highly paid professional basketball players. And even if you're going to be cynical and say that's the main reason for this, at least it's resulting in better basketball to watch. And the game against Portland was a great example of that.
And I think I get your answer, you know, to the next question in general, and that, you know, we are a month past the trade deadline. And I remember your reaction. You know, I know several folks interact with you. I think that's great on Twitter that, you know, you're as interactive as you are, being a source of knowledge for a lot of folks. But you told folks, you know, there was disappointment at the trade deadline. When perception became reality, it seemed like that there wasn't much emphasis on getting future value. There was more on getting present value. But you told folks, hey, in the end, we're trying to, you know, change the roster on the fly to convey. And this, our front office looks competent. It looks like that we truly are. We have an advantage against some teams on offense. And a month to 6 weeks ago, you couldn't say that. Overall, do you feel like the front office passed with flying colors with the results of the trade deadline?
I think you could always want more. You know, that there's the famous children's book. If you give a mouse a cookie, they're going to want a glass of milk, right? You're always going to want more than what you're given. That's one of the aspects of human nature that we all deal with on a daily basis. You can come up with theoretical deals, Malik Monk in a first round pick from Charlotte. You know, that's one that gets floated out a lot. That wasn't a real deal. You know what I mean? Like, you have to deal in reality. And if they were trying to give you a heavily protected first and Bismack Biyombo or something like that, that's not worth Marc Gasol. And it doesn't help with your goal, which I believe, and I said it at the start of the season, and it was made clear after the trade deadline. To me, the goal all along has been to convey this pick this year. That's been what they wanted. Obviously, if they made the playoffs, they would have conveyed the pick. But I said at the start of this season, I would be happy if they sent the pick to Boston. I would consider this season a success. And even after all the craziness and all the bad things that have happened in this campaign, especially with the injuries of Kyle Anderson, Jaren Jackson Jr., Dylan Brooks, the trade of Marc Gasol, of course, which brings about a bunch of emotion, they still have that opportunity. So for me, to bring back a Jonas Valanciunas, who's the opposite of Mark, the exact opposite player in terms of physicality, screen setting, just overall style of play, you know, he's a breath of fresh air. I don't think he's better than Marc Gasol. If he was, they wouldn't have traded Valanciunas for Mark. But at the same time, I think he's a better fit for this Grizzlies roster. DeLon Wright is an old player, quote-unquote, at 27, going into his first non-rookie contract, but he's still relatively young. He's entering his prime or at his prime, and he showed against Portland what he's capable of when given full opportunity. Should fans expect 25 points a night for him? No. But that level of production in terms of driving to the basket, defensive versatility on the perimeter, I view him as another Kyle Anderson type, a guy who's versatile, able to do multiple things, just more perimeter-based, is more intermediate, can play the stretch four. With a guy like DeLon, he can play pretty much any perimeter position, the one through the three. C.J. Miles was salary cap filler. He was filler in that trade. But at the same time, it allows for a team like Memphis to have a wing who can play the four again in small ball situations. We talk about him being cap filler, but it was C.J. Miles playing the four to close out the game last night. And he made a key block. He made key plays against the Trailblazers to help Memphis preserve the victory. So that trade was not so much about the future, as you mentioned a little while ago, as the here and now. And that's okay for me, because my goal was always to convey this pick. I believe this draft is very top heavy. You've got Zion Williamson in tier one. Then you've got Ja Morant and RJ Barrett in tier two. And then to me, tier three is a drastic drop off from there. So if you're not in the top three, and I think you can make an argument if you're not in the top one, you're not really getting great value in this draft. So it's a blessing in disguise to be in this situation. You at least get off the obligation to Boston. You find a way to get that pick to them in a weaker draft. And now the rebuild can fully start. And you've got, again, a bunch of guys that, while they may not have an undying loyalty to Memphis, they at least have an undying loyalty to themselves being as professionally sustainable as they can. And that's going to pay off in the short term, I think, for Memphis as they try to meet the obligation for the draft pick this year.
And I do agree with you. I don't think that Valanciunas is on the level of Mark, but you being the anti-Mark, you know, as I've seen you call him, I think that it's a matter of layers. You know, I've talked about on defense with Kyle Anderson and Jaren Jackson Jr., you've got the length on the perimeter versus the length down low. On offense now with Valanciunas, you've got the guard-oriented focus outside, but you've also got the inside look with Valanciunas. It's just that different looks that makes your offense more balanced, more versatile. And that leads me into my next question. You know, I think that Wright and Valanciunas, to me, make the most sense as being targets for the Grizzlies going forward, making them a part of the future. Have DeLon Wright and Valanciunas shown you what you need to see for the Grizzlies to make an investment in them? Or is there something you're looking for in each player that will get you to that point, to where you truly want to, you know, give them either the raise or the long-term commitment they're going to be looking for to make them part of, you know, the long-term view here in Memphis?
Well, there's always room for improvement, right? I mean, Valanciunas really struggles defensively at times. As good as he is as an offensive post player, as good as he is as a rebounder, he's not the best defender, at least not consistently. So I'd like to see him be a better rim protector as the season closes out the next 5 weeks or so. And then when it comes to Wright, consistency with shooting. Now, across their careers, both Valanciunas and Wright have struggled in these areas, and I think it's fair to say that you shouldn't expect too much growth. I mean, they're pretty much close to finished products, even though they're entering their primes. I don't know how much more development is there for those two guys in those areas of their games, but it would be good to see them kind of emphasize on those things or focus on those things the next 5 weeks or so and show growth in their game. I've always liked DeLon Wright, and I was very excited when they acquired him. I think of the two, he's the more likely to be in the long-term plans because they don't really have a ton of options on the wing beyond this year. Avery Bradley, you'd imagine, even if he does come back, it probably won't be for the $13 million price tag. CJ Miles, again, he'll opt in, but he's more of a three or four at this stage. Dylan Brooks, probably in a similar boat in terms of at least being a three, maybe a two. But DeLon Wright can obviously play the point guard position. He can play point, he can play shooting guard, he can do a lot of things on the perimeter. He's malleable with a lot of different lineup concepts. Valanciunas isn't really that. And it kind of comes down to how you view Jaren Jackson Jr. moving forward. If you think he's a true power forward, at least for next season, because of his body continuing to develop, being so young, then I think it makes sense to keep Valanciunas around because he is what Jaren is not. He is a strong rebounder. He is a good screen setter. He is somebody who can score on the block and match up strength for strength with the best bigs in the NBA when it comes to physicality. Steven Adams is a great example of that. There were times where Jonas Valanciunas in that game was able to back down Steven Adams, arguably the strongest player in the NBA, and have his way with him in the post. So the fact that he does things that Jaren does not do well lends me to think that there's value in keeping him around at least for another year or two as Jaren's body continues to develop. I mean, Jaren's only going to be 20 years old, 21 years old by the time, say, you sign Valanciunas to a two-year, $32 million contract or something like that. By the time that expires, Jaren's only going to be 21 years old. He's still physically developing now. So it gives him a little bit more leeway for that. I'd be fine with both of them coming back, but in terms of a long-term deal, I still think over the lifespan of Jaren Jackson's career in Memphis, which should be at least 9 years because of that five-year contract that rookies can sign with their original teams coming out of their rookie deals, I imagine Jaren's going to be a center more than he's going to be a power forward. So I don't know if Valanciunas is in the long-term plans, but at least going into 2019-2020, I think you can make a real argument for both of them still being around and in similar roles to what they currently hold.
And that's something, you know, about the front office, you know, the long-term view in place. And you were talking about DeLon Wright, Jonas Valanciunas. They're close to finished products. Of course, we know with Jaren Jackson Jr., he is far from that, and that's what makes it so exciting. But you wrote a recent article for Grizzlies and Bear Blues. It was talking about the trudge with Jaren Jackson Jr., highlighting his return from injury. Is there really, you know, a reason to rush him back? Also, at such a young age, making sure to continue to put the work in to get back healthy. But to expand the picture a little bit, you know, over the past month, the Grizzlies, again, I call it modernizing the roster. They become more offensively focused. And with Jaren Jackson Jr., you have a naturally fun guy. It looks like becoming more offensively focused has made the Grizzlies product more fun. And if we're going to embrace a rebuild, I think that fun has to be a focus, and that may be through being more offensively minded in terms of structuring the roster. We saw last offseason they doubled down on defense. My question is, do you think the Grizzlies, since they've seen the month worth of product that they had from the trade deadline, do you think the overall organizational philosophy, especially if there's going to be turnover, it'll change to an offensive minded focus to make it more fun, to make the rebuild easier to embrace?
Well, I think you made a good point there at the end of your statement, talking about depending on who's in the front office. Because in that same article, I wrote about the idea, you don't know who's going to be here. You know, most folks, if you listen to people far more tuned in than me to the organization, but even in my conversations, people expect some sort of change to come. It might not be wholesale. It might be something like Chris Wallace or John Hollinger or both. Moving on, and internal raises or promotions, excuse me, like a Chris Makris or even a Tayshaun Prince getting opportunities to move up the front office ladder. But whether it's a fire sale and it's a complete overhaul, or whether it's one of those subtle or maybe even a little more than subtle, but internal developed promotions, people are expecting change to come. Now, what are these guys going to do once they take the reins? I think it's safe to say J.B. Bickerstaff, throughout his coaching career, has been focused on defense. It goes back to what you were talking about defensive focus. So if you do want to become more offensively driven, does that mean you move on from J.B. Bickerstaff? There's a lot of questions that have to be answered. But I do think that you have to remember, Jaron is a much better defender even now than he is an offensive player. He's just more accomplished, more polished on that end of the floor. Even after being out for several games, I think he's still rated as the highest or the best rookie defender in the entire NBA. So that's still where the strength of his game is at this point, but he's definitely further along offensively than I think most people give him credit for. You look at Valanciunas, you look at Dylan Brooks when he returns, you look at an Ivan Rabb. A lot of these pieces that figure to be here next season, because again, there could be a lot of roster overturn again. You just look at contract structures and kind of put a guess together as to who's still going to be here. A lot of them are more offensively skilled. You know, Dylan Brooks plays his tail off when it comes to defense, but I don't think anybody would say he's a defensive savant. Same thing with Ivan Rabb. He's too small to defend well on the block, and I'm not sure he's fleet of foot enough to be a good defender on the perimeter on a consistent basis. So you have to look at the roster you have. You have to decide who you want to hold on to, who you want to opt out of, who you want to try to make trades for. Mike Conley will probably be on the trade block again in the summer, and that obviously adds a wrinkle to all of this. It's hard to establish what they're going to be and how they're going to get to that place without knowing who's going to be in charge to make those decisions. So Jaron Jackson Jr. will almost certainly be there, or will certainly be there. Kyle Anderson will most likely be there, and we talked about Dylan and Ivan. Those are all names that will probably still be on the roster, but who is helping them build whatever this culture or climate of this organization is going to be in the wake of moving from Mark this offseason, and obviously before the trade deadline with Mark, that remains to be seen. So it's certainly possible, Sean, but anything's possible depending on how far they go in terms of overturning the front office.
And as we wrap up here with Joe Mullinax, a regular weekly guest here on Locked On Grizzlies, you know, you also highlighted the fact that on the annual article that ESPN comes out with, Jaron Jackson Jr. was number 16 on the top 25 under 25. But it's something interesting about that article that I kind of wanted to get your thoughts on, and also the actual rankings, was that this year each of the top five draft picks were on the top 25 under 25. But the interesting thing about the other four teams, the Hawks, the Suns, the Kings, and the Mavericks, they had a second player besides their draft pick this year that was on it as well. The Grizzlies obviously did not have that. My question to you is this, is say we look out a year or two from now, do you see a way the Grizzlies, if they don't convey this year, do you see any way in which we might be able to get an additional young talent, a complementary young talent of that level with Jaron to really, you know, speed up the rebuild or to, you know, make it to where the Grizzlies are seen on the same level as future contenders with these other teams that had draft picks this year?
That's a terrific question. And that's a great point that Sacramento, Dallas, all these other teams have other young pieces in place, whereas Memphis doesn't have that. And you pay for the sins of previous poor drafts and the overall signings that have gone awry. You know, eventually these decisions have consequences, and Memphis is kind of paying the piper right now. If you convey the pick, the easiest way to answer that question is through restricted free agency. It's an opportunity for Memphis to, like they did with Kyle Anderson and like they probably will do with DeLon Wright, to take advantage of a little bit more structure on a contract, to try to test and see if a team wants to re-sign a player or not. There's guys like Emmanuel Mudiay, Kelly Oubre Jr. They're both under the age of 25. That'll be available in restricted free agency. And obviously Memphis was interested in Oubre earlier in the year in the failed Brooks trade. I think you'll see them connected to people like that in free agency, especially if they find a way to move on from Chandler Parsons and or Mike Conley. That obviously frees up some cap space, even if Valanciunas and Miles opt into their deals. You're not going to recruit Kawhi Leonard, Klay Thompson, Kevin Durant, Jimmy Butler, you know, even a Kemba Walker or somebody like that. They're not coming to Memphis. So you need to go through and find young players who you might have to overpay a little bit in restricted free agency, test and see if Phoenix or any of these other teams, the Knicks, are interested in paying the money for these guys. And then beyond that, obviously you need to be smart with your second round picks. You have to be savvy in terms of where you invest those resources. You have to continue to try to develop players like Javon Carter, who had a great game in the G League. He's kind of floating between the G League and Memphis. You'd have to imagine he'll have a larger role with the Grizzlies next year. You have to continue development, and that kind of comes back to our central point that we've been talking about throughout this segment. Who's going to be there to develop them? And I think that's a very key question moving forward, because in the absence of a first-round pick this year, as you alluded to, you're going to have to find ways to put pieces around Jaren that don't just fit next to him, but they help him be at his very best. Because he's still a young player. He was the youngest player on that 25 under 25 list. He's still somebody who's finding his skill set, figuring out how his body works in the NBA. You need someone who, they don't have to be the same age as Jaren, but their window of success and their window of opportunity toward NBA primes needs to be somewhat in line with Jaren. And I think finding those guys that are on those restricted type of deals, even a guy like a Malcolm Brogdon, I love Malcolm Brogdon. He's a little bit younger than DeLon Wright, but that would be another guy who's, you know, 26, 27 years old, that if you're willing to overpay a little bit, 18, 19 million a year, perhaps, you can probably get him from the Bucks. And that's a guy whose skill set as a creator off the dribble, his shooting propensity, he would fit perfectly alongside Jaren, even though he's about 6 or 7 years older. So those are the types of guys they're going to have to find. It's not going to be a big swing at the fence like they tried to take with Chandler Parsons. It's going to be smaller, more planned out deals of guys who have a skill set that is comparable and compatible with Jaren.
Well, folks, you now see why it's hard to find a better source of information about the Grizzlies and insight than Joe Mullinax. You can catch Joe now. And Joe, congratulations on obviously the expanded opportunities for you. You're now on the Eric Hasseltine Show on Fridays every week, and you're also on the Gary Parrish Show along with your podcast, Grizzly Bear Blues Live. Is that correct? Those are all three every week now, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. Two spots on 92.9. It's a opportunity to also my Grizzly Bear Blues. You know this, Sean. I'm a big believer in it being a team kind of effort. You know, I'm honored that people connect GBB to me so easily, but folks like you, Mark, obviously Matt Preston, Parker Fleming, Nate Chester, up and down the list. We have so many people that are so talented that help us make GrizzlyBearBlues.com one of the leading sources for Grizzlies content that there is out there among all the different great places that you can read and listen about the Grizzlies. I'd put us up there with just about everybody. So I'm very grateful to Brad Carson and the good folks over at 92.9 who have given me the opportunity to have a platform to talk about Grizzly Bear Blues and the great work that we're doing as a staff over there. And obviously Grizzly Bear Blues Live moving over to the SB Nation podcast network in the next week or so. That's another fun piece of all of this. And it's really cool to see the growth that the site's going through in my third year here as site manager. And it's only going to get bigger and better from here.
And I've got one last question for you, Joe, as we wrap up. Have you burned your Bryce Harper jersey yet with him being a Philly now?
I might have a unique take on this. Maybe you're not expecting this from me. I wish him the best. I don't really have any ill will towards him. In fairness to Bryce, he always said it was about the money. I don't have the direct quote in front of me, but somebody said something about like a $400 million contract last offseason, and he said, "You're selling me short, bro," or something like that. Like, he has always been about wanting to break that record that Stanton set with his deal. I'm not mad at him for it. I'm glad the Nationals didn't sign him to that contract. That's too many years, no opt-out, no trade clause. That's a pretty big commitment. I worry about him in Philly because Bryce was kind of treated with kid gloves in Washington, D.C. He wouldn't run out ground balls at times. He got into a fight with Palpavon. There were a lot of things that kind of rubbed people the wrong way, but because he was a D.C. guy coming up through the national system, he was kind of, you know, treated nicely. It's going to be the opposite of that in Philly. He's a mercenary. He's a hired gun now. And the first time that he has a three-week-long slump like he had several times in Washington, I don't think the Philly media and fans are going to be as understanding as the D.C. ones. So I wish him well. I wish him the best. I am happy to be a Nationals baseball fan because I think Mike Rizzo, the general manager, has done a terrific job kind of setting them up for this possibility of happening. Victor Robles and Juan Soto and Adam Eaton, Michael Taylor, they have a pretty solid outfield still, and they've had the money to be able to sign other free agents and shore up some other weaknesses. I think it'll be the Phillies and the Nationals competing for the NFC or NL East, excuse me, for years to come, and that's a good thing for baseball. That's a good little rivalry. So I wish Bryce the best. I'm glad the Nationals didn't sign him, and I'm glad he got his money.
Well, and we'll end with this, just a quick thought. I think that Victor Robles at $500,000 or so for the next 3 years probably might be a better value than Bryce Harper at $30 million. But, Joe, let's not sell him short. Neither one of those guys are Ronald Acuna from yours truly, Atlanta Braves. So we'll see what happens. Joe,
no, you're exactly right about that. It is interesting how the Braves are overlooked. The team that actually won the division is the one that no one talks about. So it's going to be fun. And don't forget the Mets. The NL East is going to be a good little race. It's going to be fun.
Yep. It'll give us something to talk about for sure. Well, Joe, thank you so much for taking the time to join us. We certainly hope that you have a good week, good end of your week. And I'm sure that Mark will look forward to welcoming you back next week.
Keep up. Enjoy talking with you.
All right. Thank you so much, Joe Mullinax. And we'll be right back with more here on the.
Again, we certainly want to thank Joe Mullinax for taking the time each week to join us here on the Locked On Grizzlies podcast. A great insight, a great conversation, and just some fun, being able to pick his brain on all things Grizzlies. And basically, that was the theme of this episode. Wanted to have some fun talking with Joe about the present and the future, and now wanting to really focus, on some nostalgia, the past, in a time of clear transition for the Grizzlies, where they're kind of leaving the past and the present behind, focusing on the future. Of course, with Marc Gasol traded, there being a good chance that Mike Conley is likely moved in the summer. Just wanted to have some fun with some poll questions on Twitter, and I put three poll questions out there. And the first one that I put out there, I asked, who is the most beloved Grizzly of all time? We obviously know that the connection that the Grizzlies have with the city of Memphis is probably one of the best and most deeply rooted in all of sports. There's just a mutual love between Grizzlies fans, the city of Memphis, and the Grizzlies themselves. And the options that I gave were the core four in terms of being the most beloved. And that's no disrespect to anybody that played or anybody that was a part of the Grizzlies before the grit and grind era. It was just that, during those times, it was a struggle. The city of Memphis was also probably more focused on the Tigers than it was the Grizzlies. But, of the four options, Zach Randolph, Tony Allen, Mike Conley, and Marc Gasol, it should come as no surprise that the winner of the poll was Zach Randolph. When you combine on-the-court production with just a person that defined the grit and grind era, it was Zach Randolph. His hard-nosed style, his production versus potential. If you look at the skill set of Zach Randolph, you would not believe how productive he actually is. The way that coming to Memphis made him better. Memphis made Zach better just as much as Zach made Memphis better in terms of the Grizzlies and the court. When the Grizzlies traded for Zach, it was viewed as a questionable move because you had this guy who had immense potential but just could not stay, keep his nose straight, keep his nose out of trouble. But when he got to Memphis, he embraced the game, he embraced the culture, he helped establish the culture here. So I completely agree that Zach Randolph is probably the most beloved Grizzly. Coming in second was Mike Conley, and the reason why I think Mike Conley is second is because, again, it's kind of like Zach Randolph. He's a good player on the court, but just off the court, Mike Conley is such a wonderful guy. I think he is just a great human being. He has embraced Memphis. I think that shined through more now than even when we were winning because of how he's been committed to Memphis, especially this year, how he's returned from injury. And just, no matter the situation, has rose to the occasion and been completely committed to the city of Memphis. And surprisingly to me, Marc Gasol finished third, and then Tony Allen finished fourth. I get if you were to group these four players together, the whole one is not like the others would apply. Tony Allen, you know, it's just he's a limited player. He's not on the same level as the other three. But I really thought, in my opinion, Tony is probably my second most beloved Grizzly. Thought he would finish second on this list. And the reason why that is because as great as Zach is and how he defined the culture and things like that, the grit and grind era started with Tony Allen. And if you want to talk about a player who really embraced the crowd, who truly understood that the Memphis connect, that the Grizzlies' connection with the crowd could give the Grizzlies an advantage at home, that was Tony Allen. I've seen very few players who have been able to take a moment of energy, a moment, a one play, and just turn that into an emotion that could change the momentum of the game, and that was, you know, Tony Allen. To go along with the fact that he was an elite defender and defense was the calling card of the grit and grind era. So, surprised that Tony got the fewest votes out of this. In my opinion, he'd be the second most beloved Grizzly. And then, you know, finishing third in the poll, but in my opinion, it probably if you expanded the question, this guy would probably finish last, is Marc Gasol. And I don't think it's necessarily a knock on Gasol that he would finish last. It's just that of these four players, Marc probably generates the lowest positive opinion for a couple reasons. He's been polarizing at times. And also his play on the court. I don't think anybody wants to question Mark's devotion to Memphis. He's made it clear that Memphis will always be his home, that he's devoted to the city and the fans. But I think, you know, on the court that has part of to do with it. As successful as Mark has been, he also has never fit the stereotype of what people feel someone his size should be. And so I think that's frustrated people at times. And, you know, we can kind of see, you know, in how Jonas Valanciunas is playing, people are embracing that because they think a guy that size, that's how he should play. So, you know, so just the rankings of these polls, you know, in terms of, you know, how beloved they are. Zach Randolph, Mike Conley, Tony Allen, and Marc Gasol, and then Tony Allen. And that does make some sense. But another thing that I was happy to say about these polls, it shined through in my second question, was the thing about Memphis is, as much as they love the Grizzlies, it's not all passion. These guys are intelligent when it comes to basketball, and it makes perfect sense with how much basketball is woven into the fiber of the city. Memphis understands basketball. And so when I asked the second question, who has been the best player on the court in Grizzlies history, my options were Marc Gasol, Zach Randolph, Mike Conley, and Pau Gasol. And with no surprise, Marc Gasol is the best player in Grizzlies history. I completely agree with that. There is not a player who, in terms of accolades, in terms of ceiling, and in terms of overall production, has been as successful as Marc Gasol has on the court. It's just simply true statistics-wise. Now, of those options, Pau Gasol is by far the best player overall in terms of a career, but not when he was with the Grizzlies. So I agree, Marc Gasol has reached a level of play that no one else has, and the only person that I really think, you know, has the chance to reach that level is Jaren Jackson Jr. We'll see. Obviously, you know, it's too early to truly tell. But in this, you know, more than nearly half the vote went to Marc Gasol. Then Conley and Zach basically each got a quarter of the vote. But I do agree. I think that, you know, no matter how you may want to spin it in terms of, you know, well, Gasol should have played this way, there's no denying that the way that he played was successful. And it was a big part of why the Grizzlies were able to contend as much as they were, despite never having a true superstar. Marc Gasol truly was the closest thing the Grizzlies have ever had to a true superstar. Not saying he was, not saying he is, but he was as close as the Grizzlies have ever had. And so I do agree that in terms of success on the court, Marc Gasol has been the most successful Grizzly in franchise history. And then I had a little bit of fun. I just wanted to just for the sake of fun, ask Grizzlies fans if you could have one combination in their prime going forward, based off a team that, you know, has found success with post-duos in the past. If you could have one combination going forward, would you rather have Powell Marc Gasol or Zach Randolph and Jaren Jackson Jr.? And Powell Marc Gasol won significantly. And again, This was going to be an interesting one for me because I thought that if I put Jaren Jackson and if I put Zach Randolph, how much Zach Randolph is beloved, and the fact that Jaren Jackson is, you know, recent, he's the clear focus of the Grizzlies going forward. I thought that combination may win, but Grizzlies fans truly show they know what they're talking about and that they picked Mark and Pau Gasol, and I agree. Mark and Pau Gasol would be an excellent post combination in their prime. They would complement each other better. They would be able to make it to where they could be offensively and defensively efficient. And while Zach Randolph would be a perfect complement to Jaren Jackson Jr., you know, in his prime, I also think that you would be missing. You would probably have a little bit less on offense. You may be better defensively because I think Jaren Jackson has the most talent of any, you know, of these players defensively. But yeah, I completely agree. I think that overall, Mark and Pau offer more production and potential as a group than Zach and Jaren do. And I think that, you know, that those three poll questions, you know, really kind of encompass what has been debated. You know, we love to talk about, you know, rankings and things such as that. And while it's hard to rank different eras, I think it's fun. I think it puts a perspective into place. For instance, I'll say, when it comes to my top five Grizzlies of all times, I rank them as this, in terms of who I love and in terms of who I think is being, you know, the highest level of play. I go Marc Gasol, Mike Conley, Zach Randolph, Pau Gasol, and then Tony Allen. And the reason why I rank Pau above Allen is because Powell was just a better player, and he also was the first true star that Memphis had, and I think that there's something of value and something to respect about that. But this is what I will end with. The fact that I rank these players now is also, it comes with the caveat that I think that this easily could be changed due to Jaren Jackson Jr. I have said in writing and, you know, on the 3D podcast, even on here, I think that Jaren Jackson Jr. is the most naturally talented player that the Grizzlies have ever had. And I don't think that's a stretch. I just think that it's the absolute truth. And I also think that that is pertinent. What is so true about that is the fact that his basis is in defense. As Joe said, Jaren Jackson Jr. is a more talented defensive player than he is offensively right now. And at such a young age, that is so rare to see a prospect who can be effective on defense, you know, at such a young age in the league. And so as we discuss, you know, the past, present, and future, at a time when memories are important to hold on to, and as moments are getting created, it's fine to embrace the past. It's fun to do that in a present that, you know, is hard to swallow, that's hard to go through. But I think when you really look at the Grizzlies past, I think Grizzlies fans have a very intelligent way of looking at it. They embrace these players for how much they love the city of Memphis. They know how much each player gave their all for Memphis. They're able to tell you that how successful they were on the court. But I just think that when it comes to the future, and I think that when it comes to how the Grizzlies fans should really look at this team around Jaren Jackson Jr., I just want to encompass just how much potential this young man has. And I don't know if he's going to be a Hall of Famer. I don't know if he's going to be someone that is just going to be on the level of a lot of these, you know, pop culture icons. But I do know that so far, Jaren Jackson Jr. seems to love the city of Memphis, and fans love him. And if we can continue to progress this way, yes, we're embracing the rebuild. Yes, we are having fun, you know, with what we're doing now in terms of the team concept. I think if we can keep those as themes around Jaren Jackson, that presents an environment that would allow for him to grow and to develop the player that he can be. So that's overall what I wanted to talk with y'all about today. And it was great again having Joel on the show. A very fun interaction with the polls. You know, I think that, you know, again, Memphis fans got it right. But overall, I just think that, you know, in a time right now where, you know, yeah, it's more questions and answers and some more struggles and success right now. It's still nice to be able to have plenty to reminisce about, plenty to debate about, plenty to hope for. And I think what it all comes back to is just how well this franchise has been connected to the city, and that with a player like Jaren in place, I think that can certainly continue as we head into the future. Obviously, tomorrow we'll finish up our week, and I will have the pleasure of speaking with Mr. Tony Jones. I'm very excited about this interview with the Jazz coming, you know, with the Jazz and Grizzlies playing tomorrow. As all know, the Jazz were probably the biggest pursuer of Mike Conley at the trade deadline. We're going to talk with Tony a little bit about that. Tony also seems to have a good opinion on Memphis. It seems like the Grizzlies may be a team of interest for him, as they have been in a while. So we're going to discuss some interesting topics with him. Really looking forward to that conversation. We'll preview the Jazz game, and from there, you know, we'll wrap the week up. But again, can't thank you enough for joining us. I hope y'all have a wonderful Thursday, and we will see you tomorrow here on the Locked On Grizzlies podcast.